We're going to go ahead and call this special meeting of the Board of Regents to order. Can we please get a roll call?
Regent Carter.
Here.
Regent Carvalho.
Here.
Regent Del Carlo.
Here.
Vice Chair Dubrava.
Here.
Chair Geddes.
Here.
Regent Hayes.
Here.
Regent Lieberman.
Here.
Regent McAdoo.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran.
Yes.
Regent Page.
Here.
Regent Perkins. Regent Trachok.
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. If Regent Carvalho would lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I do want to welcome Officer in Charge, Kamut Acharya from DRI. Thank you for joining us. We will now move on to item number one, public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
No public comment from Elko.
Is there any public comment in Reno?
No public comment in Reno.
Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? State your name and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chancellor Riley, regents, and distinguished guests. For the record, my name is Andrew Sierra. I'm a current student at the College of Southern Nevada and the former student body president. I'm here today to voice my support in favor of Agenda Item 2B. Assemblyman Tyrone Thompson will always be remembered for his commitment towards the community. I recall having a conversation with him during the topping off ceremony at the North Las Vegas Student Union. He talked about how the student union served as a reminder of how the community has flourished over the decades. Students across campus will remember his encouraging words and his leadership. Naming the student union after him is a step in the right direction towards commemorating his work. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment here in Las Vegas? I will note for the record that we did receive a letter of support for item 2B from Councilman Cedric Creer, former Regent Creer, and we will add that to the record. And before we get into the consent items, we have a few comments. President Zaragoza.
Mr. Chairman, Regent, Chancellor, colleagues, and guests, for the record, I'm Federico Zaragoza, President of the College of Southern Nevada. It is my distinct honor to request board approval to name the newly constructed College of Southern Nevada North Las Vegas Campus Student Union after Assemblyperson Tyrone Thompson, who unexpectedly passed away on May 4, 2019. The North Las Vegas Campus Student Union building will be completed in August of 2019, providing the opportunity for CSN to honor Assemblyperson Thompson's legacy with a building named after him. Assemblyman Thompson was very much a part of the College of Southern Nevada as he regularly attended and hosted events on our campuses. He was a tireless advocate for increasing student success at all NCE institutions, particularly for low-income and minority students. He chaired the CSN Mentor Committee and helped launch Bump Up, an African-American student success program at CSN. He was appointed to represent Assembly District 17 in 2013. He served in four regular sessions and four special sessions. His passion for education led him to serve as the chairman of the Assembly Education Committee. This past legislative session, Assemblyperson Thompson graciously hosted nearly 100 CSN students during CSN Day at the state capitol. He was the keynote speaker at our fall 2019 CSN North Las Vegas Campus Student Union Topping Off Ceremony, the very building we propose be named in his honor. At this time, I would like to ask Dr. Arnold Bell, who has been at the forefront of this request from the very beginning, to make a few comments and to introduce family members in attendance. Mr. Bell.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Dr. Arnold Bell. I'm a professor at the College of Southern Nevada.
been employed at that institution for about 15, 20 years. So thank you very much, Dr. Z. At this point in time, I want to take it upon myself to have Ms. Mason come up here with me as well as her family. So I think it's very important that we understand the reach, not just beyond his immediate family, but to our community. So at this point in time, I would like to ask Ms. Mason to introduce each one of her family members that's coming here to support this endeavor that you guys review with this item. Thank you. Ms. Mason.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sonia Mason. I'm Tyrone Thompson's sister. And I have here with me his best friend, Patrick Williams, and also my lovely aunt, Beatrice Soares.
So with that being said there, I just want to take time to really allow all of us to reflect upon the significance of the contribution to the late Honorable Ipsiliman Tyrone Thompson. More than likely, each one of us have some type of interaction with this individual, and the significance of what he had did to our community is far beyond the man himself. So with that being said, I want to take it upon myself to thank a multitude of individuals who actually supported this endeavor, beginning with Dr. Z and his administrative staff. I also want to mention Hannah Brown, the President Emeritus of the Las Vegas Chamber of Commerce. I also want to mention Dr. Donald Cheney. I also want to mention Aaron Ford, the Nevada Attorney General. I also, as mentioned earlier, about Regent Creer, which is now Councilman Creer, as well as Commissioner Weekly, Trustee Dr. Linda Young, Nevada Black Legislators, Tony F. Sanchez, the Executive Vice President of the Business Development of External Relationships, and the Nevada Hispanic Legislative Caucus. So with this being said, Mr. Thompson, he served on many, many legislative committees in the 6 years he served in the Nevada State Assemblyman, and was a tireless champion not just for NSHE, CSN, and a multitude of projects that advanced the causes of not for communities of his community, but our community. So in summary, the late Honorable Assemblyman Tyrone Thompson has an exemplary record of community engagement, educational commitment, and was a strong advocate for CSN, accessibility of students of color to the post-secondary environment, the working force, economic development environment, as well as prison education and education in general. I also want to take time, too, to invite another colleague of mine, which I remember as a student, Assemblyman Mr. McCurdy. Can you come up here as well? This gentleman as well is one of the reasons why we're here today. And I want to thank you very much here, and I also want to give the Assemblyman an opportunity to share his thoughts about the significance of your consideration of naming this building after the late Honorable Tyrone Thompson. Assemblyman.
Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, my name is William McCurdy II, Assemblyman representing District 6. It is an honor and privilege to be here before you all. This afternoon, I would also like to give special recognition to Dr. Zaragoza and many of you here on the board. I had an opportunity to serve with a lot of you during my tenure as student body president at the College of Southern Nevada. But we're here today to discuss the naming of the Student Union in North Las Vegas campus after my friend, mentor, and colleague, and also a roommate while I'm in Carson City, Assemblyman Tyrone Thompson of District 17. It is particularly important for me to be here because, as you know, who you have to look up to and who you have to learn from is really important in your life. It shapes who you can become. It shapes the possibilities that are available to you. And ultimately, it helps you to take that extra step and that courage that it would take that you would need to take that step to get to where you're going to go. Assemblyman Thompson was a staunch advocate for education, homeless youth. He was particularly interested in our younger children and what they would experience in this life. I never met anyone in my life who was so passionate about the community, about the well-being of the community and how the community will perform into the future. There is no greater thing that you can do today to vote in favor of this agenda item. We all have a responsibility to make sure that we continue to represent all of our constituencies. And Assemblyman Tyrone Thompson was that. He wanted to make sure that everyone had an opportunity to succeed, that everyone had an opportunity to have those barriers removed so that they can access their dreams in this life. I am a product of some of that dream that he had. He saw me doing great things, and he would tell me. He would describe to me exactly what he would see for my future. And I know that if he were here and the roles were reversed and I was not here, and I was on the agenda for consideration, he would be here. He would have been here earlier, actually. He would have been here earlier. So I am blessed for having the opportunity to experience his life, for him to pour into me so that I may understand what my calling is. And I will disclose to you that my calling is to make sure that I stand in the gap for him, to continue his work, advocating for all communities, but particularly for young men of color, because the achievement gap is too great. We have a lot of work to do. And I had an opportunity to talk with our chancellor about his goals for the system. And I'm pleased to align with that vision to make sure that we continue to put our students first. So I thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of this agenda item 2B for my friend, my mentor, my forever colleague, my forever roommate, Assemblyman Tyrone Thompson. It is an honor. It's probably one of the hardest things I had to do since I've left the legislature. Can't get my mind right, can't get my words together. But that's really because that's how much he meant to me. It has been hard for me to speak about him without completely shedding tears and getting all sloppy on the mic, and it's an ugly scene for me to cry. It's ugly, it's not pretty. But I would encourage you to support this agenda item. I thank you for your work on behalf of our students. I thank you for your vision for all of us, because I am still a student. And I look forward to all that we will continue to do into the future, to continue to advocate for all of our students, making sure that we continue to increase our workforce productivity and increase our graduate level graduates so we can continue to attract businesses here and provide jobs for those who are in need. So thank you. And I urge your support of item 2B, the naming of the North Las Vegas Student Union after my friend, my mentor, my colleague, my everything. Assemblyman Tyrone Thompson, thank you.
The significance of the individual is felt in this here office, at this here meeting, throughout our community. And I'd like to have one other Assemblywoman, Dina Neal, to please come up here and share her thoughts as well.
It's going to be really quick. So I want to thank the Board of Regents for, number one, putting this on the agenda and taking this up for a vote today. There's nothing greater than having a permanent structure that represents a memoriam of someone. And ideally, we'd like to do it while they're living, because I saw on the agenda you guys have Glenn Christensen, and he is living. But we are doing a posthumous memoriam to Assemblyman Tyrone Thompson. And I just appreciate Mr. Bell for, number one, even bringing forth the idea. He really tried to move the needle with the elects and sending information to the Latino elects and the African-American elects to gather and coalesce around this agenda item. And so we're super appreciative of his efforts and this board. And so I literally just drove up the street, because I am working on Assemblyman Thompson's mentoring commission bill and walking through that process to try to put, you know, legs to the chair that he had a vision for. And his mentoring commission directly connects and relates to education. Is one of the foundation pillars of what he's seeking. And to have a concrete structure at CSN, which is in my district, and to be able to see that every day, and the students who he mentored from Legacy High School, from K-12, Canyon Springs High School, the different high schools who will be able to walk on CSN campus and see that building named after him, there can be nothing greater for his memory and them allowing that presence and that vision to remain with them, because there were students who, when they walked across the stage for graduation in May, they felt like he was walking with them. And so to keep that building will allow that to stay in their hearts and stay in the heart of the community and for his presence to remain. And I just want to thank you for taking this up. And I know that it's lunchtime, and I will go ahead and keep my comments, and that will be wrap up my comments. Thank you.
I just want to also thank a few other individuals as well. I want to thank Regent Lieberman for allowing him and his direction to be part of this endeavor to make it a reality. Hopefully you vote in favor of this here. Also want to thank Chancellor Riley, which is an individual that spearheaded this endeavor, as well as Regent Perkins. And going back to Dr. Z and his staff, on behalf of myself as a professional at the College of Southern Nevada, I thank you for allowing this to become a reality. And Regents, please consider this naming of this building a great honor for our community and for our system. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bell. Mr. Chairman, there is an abbreviated bio and briefing paper in your board package that documents Assembly Tyron Thompson's amazing legacy and the overwhelming support to this request expressed by community groups and campus constituents to include the CSN Faculty Senate, the CSN Executive Council, the CSN Leadership Council, the CSN Foundation, and the CSN Student Government, as well as countless of community leaders and elected officials. On behalf of all of us, thank you for your support.
Chair Page, I want to just say thank you to the faculty, the students, and to President Zaragoza for bringing this important item. It's a great way to recognize someone who's had such great impact in our community. Over 20 years ago, I met Tyrone Thompson when I was county manager. He brought in his colleague, Shannon West. They were fierce advocates for the homeless. Remain so. Sadly, both of them have passed too early. So this is a great thing that CSN is moving forward, and this is a wonderful way to recognize his significance in this community. Thanks.
President Patterson.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. And, you know, it's actually a special honor to be able to present two naming of buildings today for a new school of education at the same time that Assemblywoman Thompson is being recognized as the chair of the Education Committee and such a big supporter of education and helping shape the future of education in the state. So it's also a pleasure to have Assemblywoman McCurdy and Assemblywoman Neal here as well. So we were thrilled to have the legislature and the governor approve the legislation and appropriation for the new School of Education, and they now need the money. So it's time to recognize the donors and the naming of buildings that made the $6 million match for that education building possible. And the first of those is item number 2C, which is Bob and Allison Kasner. The existing Nursing Science and Education building we're proposing to be named the Bob and Allison Kasner Academic Building. Both Bob and Allison are long-time Henderson residents, very involved in education in the community. Allison was a school teacher and ultimately a principal. She served on the foundation of Nevada State College. Bob was one of those people that was around the kitchen table when Nevada State College was formed and talking about how to build the college, and later served on the President's Advisory Council and also a successful businessman and also worked with the city of Henderson. So this is a very worthy couple and a very generous gift that makes the School of Education a reality for the name of this building. If I could ask for the indulgence of the chair to defer item 2D out of the agenda. Do you want me to speak to that now or later?
Later.
Okay. Then I again express my appreciation to these donors and the opportunity to now have a new school of education at Nevada State College.
Thank you. General Counsel Reynolds.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I'd just like to note for the record and for the board on items, consent items number 2F, 2G, and 2H, that the cost updates or the corrections for Presidents Johnson, Helens, and Patterson were for the COLAs given for fiscal years 2019 as well as 2020. That information wasn't accurate at the last board meeting, so wanted to have that updated clarification.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval of the consent items except for consent item 2D, which will be pulled for clarification? Regent Hayes.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. And second from Regent Dubrava. So we're speaking to the consent agenda except for item 2D. Regent Moran?
Item 2A, Mr. Chairman, I'd have to abstain on 2A based on the fact that I was not in attendance at that specific meeting, so I don't want to approve those, so I would respectfully abstain from consent portion of the agenda, item number 2A.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously with the one abstention on item 2A. Congratulations. We're looking forward to the grand opening. Item 2D, President Patterson.
Yes, I asked the chair if we could clarify the name on this in talking with the donors. It states that the naming would be Glenn and Andy Christensen Education Building. The name that we're proposing for the board's approval is the Glenn and Andy Christensen School of Education Building. So it's a slight clarification, but we wanted to make sure that the board understood what the name request is. Glenn and Andy, I think they've appeared in front of the board in the past. Andy was a special education teacher. Glenn has been a tireless advocate for education. He served on the governor's committee pertaining to reorganization, highly successful businessman in the state, and a chair of the foundation. And they have been working with the college almost its entire existence to make the college a better place. And they've really been working in the education space to make this community a better place. So we're honored with their donation and honored to have their name on the School of Education building. So I'd ask for the board's approval.
Do I have a motion to approve the naming of the Glenn and Annie Christensen School of Education building? Motion from Regent Dubrava, second from Regent Lieberman. Any questions or comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. We will go to item 3, collaboration with Arizona State University. Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Page. Following conversations with leadership at the institutions, as well as leadership at Arizona State University, it became clear that there is a desire to better understand the innovative ways ASU has grown that have garnered both national and international attention, particularly around their success involving student success. I've convened a small group of presidents and vice presidents from each of our 7-degree granting institutions, along with Chair Geddes and Vice Chancellor McKinnon, to join me in a 2-day visit to ASU. While there, we were greeted by President Crow, who had lined up members of the senior leadership team to provide very informative presentations over the 2-day period. Some of the key takeaways included understanding of ASU's Ed Plus, a central enterprise unit for ASU focused on the design and scalability delivery of digital teaching and learning models to increase student success and reduce barriers to achievement in higher education. The development of ME3, a major and career quiz that is online, interactive, available to students, of parents, high school students, and others, and most importantly, is completely free. Key student retention strategies that rely on real-time data that are understood across all aspects of the institution. and identifying innovative alternative sources of revenue that have helped promote both the access and research missions of the public institutions. In follow-up conversations with ASU President Crow, he has expressed a desire for ASU to partner with other state public higher education institutions and systems. We have identified that there may be some mutually beneficial areas in which our two entities could further explore collaboration. To do so, I've convened an NCHE team to work directly with senior leadership at ASU under the direction of President Crow to explore such potential collaborations. My thinking is that anything we collaborate on will need to be certainly benefit NCHE, and we'll need to ensure that NCHE students, faculty, curriculum are made with NCHE. I look forward to bringing back ideas about what we've identified at future meetings of the board, and I'm excited about such a collaboration that could be quite positive to the residents and students of Nevada. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for the chancellor? Thank you. Seeing none, we will go to item number 4, handbook revision, intellectual property. General Counsel Reynolds.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Joe Reynolds. For the record, with this agenda item, we're requesting the board's approval to amend handbook provisions to allow for the conveying of ownership of intellectual property as part of an institution's commercialization program. These changes have been worked on considerably by Vice Chancellor Abba, as well as Brooke Nielsen, legal counsel. They have the support of our research advisory council and also been reviewed by the institution's general counsels.
Do I have a motion for approval? Motion from Regent Page, second from Regent Perkins.
Chairman.
Questions, Regent Trachuk, then Hayes. Regent Trachuk.
Before we get to the address the issue, I believe that there have been some changes to the document, and former Vice Chancellor Brooke Nielsen would be able to address those now, so to make sure that the board knows exactly what it is we're voting on.
Thank you. Brooke?
Thank you, Chair Geddes, and good afternoon, Chair Geddes, Vice Chair Jubrala, Regents, Presidents. Again, for the record, I'm Brooke Nielsen, former counsel for the board. I retired
Can we get the mic closer? I can't hear you, Brooke.
Do I need to come closer to the mic?
No. Yes, please.
I'm trying to speak loud, but it's quite loudly enough. Thank you. Again, for the record, Brooke Nielsen, former counsel. I retired in 2016, for those of you who don't know me, and I occasionally get asked to help with projects, in particular this one, amendment to the intellectual property policy. I will answer the question specifically addressed by Regent Trachuk, and that is we have a proposed very slight amendment to the language, and that is the question was raised this week, and if you look at section 474A in the second sentence, you'll see a parenthesis with the word transferees in it. And the question was, what is that doing there? It looks like it's an outlier. Is it really needed? Because we didn't also do assignees or licensees of intellectual property. So in looking at that, we feel that the simplest solution is simply to strike that word transferees, because it'll be very obvious to anyone who reads this policy in the future, when they read the rest of it, we use those words, transferees, assignees, and licensees, and that will be very clear. So we would propose that with the board's approval of the policy, that parentheses be stricken in section 4A. The very same parentheses with the word transferees appears in section 4B in the first sentence, and then in section 4C in the second sentence. So with those amendments, I would request your approval. And I would thank, as Chief Counsel Reynolds already did, the assistance we had with Vice Chancellor Abba the Research Advisory Council, councils from the institutions, and I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you. Before we go to Regent Hayes, what was the maker of the motion and the second okay with striking transferees from those three sections, the section in parentheses? Okay with Regent Perkins? Okay with Regent Page?
Yes.
All right. Regent Hayes.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern, I guess, is going back 2 years, we were UNR was looking to sell a violin, and they had to come to us and ask approval. And when I became chair of BFF, we talked about how to streamline certain sales of university and institution-owned assets without having to come before us for everything. And maybe CFO Quinger can correct me if I'm wrong, or President Johnson. I think we raised the level for real goods, whether it's violins or art, to 250 that you can do without bringing it to us. If I read this correctly, and intellectual property can be worth millions, we require if they've got a piece of art they want to sell for $250,000 or more, correct me if I'm wrong on the number, I think that's where we ended up at. I think we'd initially, I'd wanted to go to five, but I ended up at 250. But they have to come to us. Intellectual property that could be worth millions, we're now going to let, if I read this right, and correct me if I'm wrong, the only approval would be the recommendation of the Intellectual Property Administration, review by the institution's general counsel, and approval of the president. Something worth millions of dollars that belongs to the institution and essentially INSHI could be sold without us ever even knowing about it. That is a little red flag to me. If we're going that way, then let's not make them bring artwork and violins and other things before us. But, I mean, these are major assets that if we were to have one institution that decided to go rogue sometime, we find out afterward they sold some intellectual property that could potentially be worth hundreds of millions for, you know, $100,000 because they needed money during a budget shortfall and they were chasing, you know, chasing pennies to stepping over dollars to chase pennies. Is that a concern to anybody else that we're giving them the ability without us even knowing they could be selling millions of dollars worth of assets?
General Counsel Reynolds?
I'll defer this actually to Ms. Nielsen to answer that question.
Thank you. Regent Hayes, actually that was a concern of mine and of others as we looked at what we were doing with this policy, that yes, this is property that is owned by the Board of Regents, and it is, we're now allowing it to be sold as part of a development and commercialization program. So that it's a big step. We recognize that. And for that reason, we added in some protections. And the first one, making it specific, that council will always review these types of agreements. So that is the amendment in the very opening sentence of this section of the policy. And then you'll see we added that transferring of intellectual property for commercialization must be done through a written agreement. I think that's pretty obvious. You always want this sort of thing in writing. And then we require at a minimum certain legal protections, and those are listed here. One, that the institution have the ability to revoke if the outside entity is not acting in the best interest of the institution. And that obviously can be further defined in the contract between the institution and any outside entity. No outside entity can pledge funds or credit of the state or of NSHI. That's a very important requirement. That's a constitutional prohibition in Nevada state constitution. We wanted to make sure that's in every agreement. Third, we wanted to make sure that if property is being transferred out, that the Board of Regents, the institution, all officers are fully indemnified and protected should that outside group act improperly. They would and get sued, cause damages. We would be fully indemnified and protected. And the fourth one is that all state and federal laws must be complied with. Something we would do anyway, we know that, but we put that language in here specifically, and in particular the Bayh-Dole Act, which addresses patents and how institutions and nonprofit organizations obtain patents that are funded through federal funding. So those at a minimum. Now, I know every agreement can have more, and they're all going to be different, but we can't write the whole contract in policy. So that's why we wanted to have minimum guidelines, knowing that there will be a lot more detail reviewed by general counsel, and then the president may approve it. And one thing I would say is that affected my thinking on this is that this is consistent with the board's policy encouraging entrepreneurial activity and commercialization. In fact, the very last section of Chapter 12 of this policy addresses entrepreneurial activity. And the board says that it supports and encourages efforts to advance research, technology commercialization, industry engagement, entrepreneurial goals, as well as state economic development and the Knowledge Fund. And I'll quote this one sentence. The board's policy says these efforts must include the vigorous pursuit of related federal, state, and industry-sponsored research, entrepreneurial, and economic development opportunities. So it's a very strong statement by the board. I understand your concern, and that's why we put those earlier protections in, but we want to provide pretty broad discretion because we want as much intellectual property commercialization as possible for our institutions. And so that's what underlies all of this.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a huge departure and delegation from our previous precedent in other areas of property that we own or the institutions own under our auspices. And I understand the protections, but we could put similar protections in for the conveyance of land or other things. I mean, yes, we want to vigorously pursue intellectual property and economic development, but if we approve this policy, we could come up with something absurd. If they could sell, say UNR could sell a $5 million piece of software they developed to a company that we would never know about, but if they get a $250,000 lease to put a site on campus, we'd have to approve it. If we want to go the direction of delegating to the institutions the ability to sell property, whether intellectual, whether real, whether personal, in the millions of dollars with certain protections built in, I think that's a much more in-depth conversation we need to look at. But I'm not okay with just having a one-off for intellectual property when we make them come before us or everything else. That's a huge delegation of authority. Ultimately, we're the ones elected and responsible and own this property. And as written, without a very in-depth conversation about doing this in all areas and building in protections for it, and we've decided that we want to delegate this huge responsibility that we were elected to uphold, I can't vote to approve this. I'm sorry.
Regent Carter, then Regent Moran.
So I have a disclosure. I was previously a student in the gaming innovation course at UNLV where I developed a casino game. If that game is marketed and sold, I'll be required to pay UNLV in the form of shared royalties pursuant to a standard contract that all students in the course are required to sign. I will receive no remuneration from UNLV. I disclose this relationship under NRS Chapter 281A, as recommended by the Nevada Ethics Commission. As this item does relate to policies relating to intellectual property, I will abstain.
Regent Moran.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually share the same concerns that Regent Hayes has with regards to the asset. I mean, that's one of our delegated responsibilities and duties as a region is to oversee the portfolio, and the portfolio will include, obviously, the real estate, but also the intellectual property. And this seems like something that if we want to have a more robust discussion on delegation, as Regent Hayes has pointed out, I think that we should have that. But I think that this was kind of a slippery slope into that delegation of something that we're really responsible for making sure to maintain and preserve the integrity of. And so I don't know if there's an appetite to maybe hold this item and allow it to come back on our next quarterly meeting, maybe in September. But I just wouldn't be able to support this item as written either. I mean, I understand the language changes from a legal standpoint relative to transferees and whatnot, and that's a cleanup housekeeping item. But from a legal standpoint, this is a little scary. And also from a board oversight standpoint, I think it's problematic as well, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Regent Dubrava.
I thank you, Chair Geddes. You know, in light of what Regent Hayes and Regent Moran have voiced, I see and recognize those concerns. And I want to know what kind of timetable are we looking at? Is there any reason that this has to be done today? Can we possibly table if the makers of the motions thought it was wise to get more information and have a more in-depth discussion?
General Counsel Reynolds?
I know that there has been some concern from institutions to try to get this clarification done as soon as possible. But also listening to the board's comments and concerns, we can come back and have some discussions on maybe putting a threshold amount and having some further conversations to put maybe some limitations on this proposal consistent with concerns expressed by regents today.
Mr. Chairman, go ahead, Bud.
Yes, Vice Chair Geddes. I think Vice President Gautam is here. Would like to address the question that was asked: is there any urgency to this? It's my understanding that there may be. So he would like to, I think, make a few comments.
For the record, Myrtle Gautam, Vice President for Research and Innovation at the University of Nevada, Reno. To the question of value, unlike a violin or real property, which has value, intellectual property, when it begins, really has no value unless it's commercialized. And the way academic research goes and the way our intellectual property goes, it has to be commercialized, it has to be licensed. A lot of times it's licensed to entities that cannot afford to put up a licensing fee or pay upfront costs. For that reason, all intellectual property, when it's transferred or it's licensed, will have an equity associated with it, that down the road when the technology is developed and the company exits, there is value at that point. Excuse me, and part of that value will come back to the institution. So, based on a very robust affiliation agreement and a service agreement that institution will enter into with this independent organization, this IP, which sitting in a cabinet, really has no value unless it's commercialized, and that commercialization may include perhaps the only remuneration could be an equity down the road. The university cannot hold equity right now. All state entities cannot hold equity. This third party can, and based on affiliation agreements, that will flow back to the institution. The inventors will still get the 60%, the departments will still get the 25%, and the costs will still be covered. So that's the reason why IP is, as in most places, most land-grant institutions and other institutions in other states where they have a research corporation or a research foundation, they assign the property and then the corporation or foundation will commercialize it. So that's the reason why IP, which really has no value sitting in a shelf, is assigned so it can be commercialized. In regards to the urgency, well, it's all about negotiations. Negotiations may end in a few hours or they may take a long time. Right now, we are negotiating with a company that's willing to license at better than market rates that we know of and provide a very healthy equity to the institution. This is a so this is a medical, something out of the ULR Med. It has to do with type 2 diabetes. We believe this is a very viable technology, and a company that had sponsored research is willing to license it from us. Negotiations are underway, but really the real value will come in when we get equity when this company exits. And I'll stop at that.
Thank you. I've got Regents Dubrava, Lieberman, Perkins, then Hayes. Regent Dubrava. Regent Lieberman.
I think we all understand the two sides of the situation. I think it's dangerous to create system policy based on the need of a current institution at a current time. I agree with Regent Hayes. This has to be thoroughly explored. Maybe BFF has to be involved in another discussion, but it can't be done today. It needs to be tabled, and it needs to be put on another agenda.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do see the point of Regent Hayes and Regent Moran brought up. They're very important. And as Regent Lieberman said, we cannot base this on, I know, I'm going against my own second. is there a way to add approval of the President and the Board of Regents? Would that change the policy that much?
General Counsel or General Counsel Brooke,
when we do it.
Yes, thank you. This is Brooke Nielsen for the record. We could very simply insert approval of the Board of Regents as well. That could be very simply done if that is the board's will today. I think, you know, with negotiations going on, that will not slow down things too much. You guys do meet regularly and, of course, have special meetings. So with that flexibility, I think the institutions can work with that requirement. I certainly understand it. As I said earlier, I understand Regent Hayes' comments because we thought about the same thing. So with that, I could propose that we add the language after review by General Counsel, scratch, and with the approval of the President, and then add the words, and the Board of Regents. And that would bring these items to you. If we want to develop that language further at a later time, I think that would be fine, but I think that would satisfy the concerns that have been raised about the value of this property that is being transferred for commercialization.
Regent Hayes, then President Johnson. Regent Hayes.
So that was part of the question I was going to have is how burdensome would it be to add that language? And I would propose in a friendly amendment, if that's the rest of the board goes and it doesn't seem overly burdensome, that we put a threshold amount of $250,000 or something. As Dr. Gollum said, many of these have no value at the time of the licensing. So that way we aren't bogging the things down. The conveyance of ownership was the one that really stood out to me. I understand a little of how this works, not at the great level that they do. But a lot of times you do. You license somebody for next to nothing. I mean, maybe it's a little amount of money or none with some back end on it if it works out. Those don't necessarily have to come before us. But if we have one out there that's being licensed and it's making a bunch of money and we're then going to sell it to the company that's licensed it, they want to buy the whole thing for $5 or $10 million. So is there a way to put a threshold amount in there? And what would the appropriate amount be? Would it be 250? Would it be 500? So that way we aren't bogging down the institutions with having to come before us, and we don't see a bunch of stuff on our consent agenda that just makes the agenda longer and, you know, we don't ever discuss. So we're only discussing things that have significance. Does that make sense for either General Counsel Reynolds or for Ms. Nielsen and to the folks who are proposing this?
General Counsel?
Regent Hayes. Brooke Nielsen again for the record. That is a longer conversation, I think, because of the variety of intellectual property, its potential for commercialization. It would be very hard today to say 250,000 or 500,000. And I know we have thresholds like that for other types of transactions. But I'm not prepared to make a proposal today at what level that should be set.
Mr. Chairman?
But with that is something we could, with the boards, we could work on that and go forward with the proposal just suggested, but come back, make the commitment to come back with a threshold, because I know you don't want your very lengthy agendas clogged with, you know, dozens of I hope there are dozens and dozens of commercialization deals, but they probably do not all need, or you would not want them to be on your agendas. But that is a commitment that we could certainly make to address that issue and come back with a little more refinement so we're not clogging up your agendas unnecessarily with these types of approvals.
I'm less concerned about bogging down our agendas and more slowing down the process at the institutions, but both come into play. If the rest of the board and the makers of the motion were amenable, I would be in favor of voting for it if we added and approval of the Board of Regents for now, knowing that in short order we'd come back with a way to make it easier so that we aren't seeing every single thing that comes through and not bogging things down.
Thank you. I've got President Johnson, Regent Krychok, Regent Moran. President Johnson.
Yes, this is Mark Johnson. I just want to lay a little context that it is referenced in this policy, the Bayh-Dole Act from a long time ago, from Birch Bayh and Robert Dole when they were both senators, requiring that any intellectual properties being produced using federal funds must be intellectually protected, the intellectual property be protected and hopefully commercialized, and that was to keep the results of publicly supported science in the public domain rather than going off to a single company and potentially be hidden. And the second thing I would say is that all of your research institutions have some form of research or research park corporations, and currently from our experience with the Nevada Research and Innovation Corporation, that was established as an affiliate of UNR for the purpose of stimulating commercialization, we cannot currently assign these intellectual properties to our commercialization corporation because we don't have this in policy. So we can't commercialize, even though we've set up the organization to support commercialization. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Krychok, then Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I understand this policy, this isn't giving the presidents the authority to transfer IP to some third party to commercialize it. As I understand it, it is the authority for the presidents to transfer the ownership interest in the IP subject to these requirements to an organization that will be controlled by the institution. I think the concerns about whether or not we're authorizing any given sale of invaluable IP to a third party is a different issue. I think first we need to give the presidents the authority to park this IP into a vehicle that then could negotiate with third parties, and then we could have a requirement, although there's no way you're going to be able to agree on a threshold for IP that's in the development stage, then you have the requirement, or could have the requirement, that it comes back to the board for approval.
Thank you. Regent Moran?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't see the rush at this point in time. I mean, we're looking to amend something. There are some good thoughts. We have some good heads here on the board that can vet some of these items. We can have our general counsel come back and provide alternatives or possible options as to how we fabricate this or amend this. But I just don't feel real comfortable amending it right now with, okay, well, let's just add this or let's just add that, especially when we have regular meetings. I mean, we may have too many meetings. I mean, we have monthly meetings, essentially. We could put this on the next month's agenda if you wanted to, but at least it gives us an opportunity to kind of vet the language and make sure that it does suit what we want in the end result. The other thing I was going to suggest, too, is that I definitely don't want to get in the way of the institutions being able to commercialize or not commercialize or do whatever it is that they want to do with regards to their intellectual property. So I don't want to create any additional administrative hurdles for them either. So maybe the conversation becomes something different. But going back to the first thought, I just think that we need additional time to be able to vet that out. Let's circulate some ideas and then get back. I mean, again, this is being brought. I haven't been on the board forever, but I've been on the board for the last couple of days. But the bottom line is that this is the first request I've seen that this is an issue. I don't know if it has come up during, 4 years ago, 8 years ago, but if it was that big of a concern, why didn't it come back then? So that kind of goes towards the urgency aspect. Why not just wait 30 days? Let's hold it, table it, and figure out what the true language looks like. Regent Guelva.
Just my final thought. I appreciate Regent Moran's comment that, we don't want to get in the way of the institutions with their negotiations. And once we throw that board approval on there, then it has to be public information. And many private companies would say, wait a minute, this is going to affect stock prices. This is something that they're going to pursue, so they don't want to be at that time ready to divulge certain negotiations and agreements with institutions. So it's tricky. So again, I agree that maybe we do need a pause, but we understand the institutions have some things, you know, cooking that we have to help them out best we can.
Council Nelson.
Thank you very much. I was just going to make the comment that agreements signed at the institutional level are public agreements. We do, during the development of intellectual property, you will have non-disclosure to protect IP while it's being worked on, but ultimately when an agreement is signed, it cannot be a secret agreement. Agreements are public. So it would be something that would be seen. I mean, Regent Dubrava mentioned that that is true in any event. So I don't...
Regent Moran.
Just real quickly. No, I appreciate Ms. Nielsen and the comments and the work and the contribution, the efforts and whatnot. I do appreciate that. I just think that there's a lot of cogs in this wheel, and it seems like she's addressing all of the cogs with the exception of the delegation issue that was brought to all of our attention by either reading the agenda item before we attended the meeting or listening to Regent Hayes outline why it would kind of throw up a few red flags if that's the way that you characterized it relative to making an amendment of this magnitude. So I just think that we're spending an awful lot of time. We have a lot of stuff to do. Our institutional presidents and their staff have a lot to do. Mr. Chairman, I mean, why not table it? Unless somebody can suggest that we're losing out on some financial economic interest or some commercialization that we're not going to benefit by not holding this for 30 days. If somebody can give me some monetary substantial value, then I would be amenable to saying, okay, let's just table it to the end of the meeting, take a short break, let's talk with counsel, and then try to squeeze this thing through at some point in time. But just to kind of throw in a couple words here and there, and it just doesn't seem prudent to me under the circumstances.
Well, we have a motion and a second. I like the idea of approving it today and then having them bring back information later so that they can work on what's out there. I think Regent Hayes' suggestion of adding in the Board of Regents approval beyond the president's would address most of our concerns today, and they could address the other concerns and come back to us. If that friendly amendment from Regent Hayes is acceptable with Regent Page and Regent Perkins.
Mr. Chairman.
Regent
Page. Wait
Page.
A second.
Yes, sir.
Again, let's focus on what we're approving today. For the presidents to have to come back and get approval for transferring the IP to an entity that's owned by them that then could go out and see if there's any interest in the public to purchase it, that's a different issue. We need to focus on what's before us today. And I don't think that you want every time you have some IP that's on the shelf that may or may not have some value that we're going to transfer to this organization owned and controlled by the institution and the board. I don't think that's an avenue to expedite commercialization of IP.
I respect your opinion, Regent Trachuk, greatly on this issue, but as the motion stands, the motion will fail. If it is an issue for the campuses to move forward with what they have and this requirement is in there and we could address it at a later time, I think that would be there. In other words, it appears that this motion would fail as stands. So I understand your concerns greatly, and I understand the point you're making. But in order for something to move forward today, I think it needs that amendment in it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
thank you. Sorry. And I just want to be really, really clear with regards to my comments. My comments do not substantiate the content of the actual language. My comments are only driven by if we're going to do amendments to any of our regulations. The institution's regulations are specific bylaws. I just think that we should have ample opportunity to take a look at it, and it should be done right. And if there's questions, we shouldn't shoot from the hip. This may be perfect the way that it's drafted. What may be perfect the way that it's drafted with the short little add-on or addendum with the Board of Regents language and the striking or interlineation of the transferee language. But the bottom line is that we have an obligation to get it right. And so I still haven't heard. So I don't want anybody to think that I don't disagree with what they're trying to do and why. I just want to make sure that we are 100% unambiguous as to what it is we're doing, what it is we're changing. And if it's something that we can all somehow agree on, that would be the best case scenario. Regent Carvalho, and then we'll go to a vote. Regent Carvalho.
He needs to bring it.
I just want, for my own clarification, an understanding of the term, the organization. I think that perhaps at the beginning of this conversation, that an organization was some outside entity that possibly was going to purchase or somehow manage the property, and that's where Regent Hayes was concerned. But during the course of this conversation and what Regent Trachuk brought up, I and President Johnson, I'm more inclined to believe that the organization is this internal university-owned corporation that we are now talking about that will manage and develop this IP. So I feel like the clarification of what the organization is needs to be done in order to approve this or to go forward.
Ms. Nelson, can you provide that clarification, please?
Thank you. The term outside independent assistant organization has been in this policy probably for several decades. That has always been language that is in the board policy. The next session, section B, addresses affiliated nonprofit corporation. That's another type of entity that is affiliated with the institution. And then the third option that institutions have is to themselves independently go out and try to commercialize, try to develop and sell products from their intellectual property. So those terms have always been in the policy. We're not changing that. But it, exactly the entity that Vice President Gautam referred to, a nonprofit research entity that they are working with, would be allowed to receive this property either through assignment, licensing, or transferring of ownership. And that's the way this policy would read should the board adopt it. So I guess I'm saying there are all different types of entities that we've always given the institutions the discretion to work with different types of entities in order to commercialize their intellectual property.
Little Gordon, I'd like to address Regent Moran's point. So when you have IP, especially in the field of medicine or biomedical arena, it has to go through the licensing process. It has to go to preclinical trials and the phase one, phase two, phase three. The difference between giving out a license, first patenting it, then licensing it, and the drug actually being developed is about $1 billion, or it could be years. So at the onset, the IP really has no value except for the licensing agreement, some licensing fees, some royalties that we can enter into. As a public institution, most of this information is and negotiations are open to public. And this is where an independent research organization comes in, to which the IP is assigned, and they can go into negotiations and move this forward. So that's where the need arises.
All right, we have a motion on the floor to approve item number 4, intellectual property, with the amendments of removing the transferees in parentheses in the three sections and adding in Board of Regents approval after President approval. Roll call vote, Mr. Gould.
Regent Carvalho.
No.
Regent Del Carlo.
Yes.
Vice Chair Dubrava.
Yes.
Chair Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent Lieberman.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
No.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran.
No.
Regent Page.
No.
Regent Perkins.
Yes.
Regent Trachuk.
Yes.
One, two, three, five. The motion passes.
Thank you. And I thank Council Nielsen and General Counsel Reynolds got marching orders to work on it and bring something back. Streamline the process.
Thank you.
We will go to item 5, code revision, vacancy in the Office of Chancellor. General Counsel Reynolds.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. This matter is a first reading to revise provisions in the code consistent with what the board had approved with respect to vacancies in the office of the president for each institution and to provide a mechanism to select a search consultant if the board should choose to go that route. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Regent Gould, sorry, no, I didn't mean to demote you.
No, thank you. And Joe may have mentioned this, I just wanted to make sure it was understood that this would make the chancellor search policy consistent with what we just did with the president search policy, nothing different. It's just that we didn't change it in the chancellor section before. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Page. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. We'll go to item number 6, authorization to commence litigation, Mackey Stadium at UNR. Chancellor Reynolds? Good Lord. I need a recess. What's my intellectual property worth? Council Reynolds.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I'm here and also present with us this morning is UNR General Counsel Mary Dugan. We're requesting authorization from the Board of Regents to commence a litigation against the Worth Group resulting from design deficiencies involving the Americans with Disabilities Act concerning UNR's Mackey Stadium.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval? Motion from Regent Lieberman, second from Regent Moran. Regent Perkins.
Just a quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not just for posturing, right? We plan to go forward with this at full throttle.
That is correct, Regent Perkins.
Seeing no other questions or comments, all in favor signify by saying aye. Oh, sorry, Regent
aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Sorry.
We can't hear him.
So we hired them for the first part of the project. It didn't comply. So they went back and fixed it and didn't comply again on the second time. So then we went out and hired a consultant to tell us it didn't comply. Any reason why we didn't hire the consultant after it was the first time? And we wait till they fix it and
I have General Counsel Mary Dugan, who can answer your question, Chair Page.
Mr. Chair, just real quick, not to interrupt, but since this is going to be pending litigation, we're going to be instituting the filing of a complaint against an entity. I think it would be better suiting at this point in time not to put additional information into the record. The item is agendized in such a fashion as to agree to allow UNR under the regulations the bylaws to move forward with the litigation. There's going to be a copy of this transcript today, and so I would make an attempt to avoid making this about a discussion of the facts and circumstances of the case. Just a simple input as a member of the Nevada Bar. Not the one that goes to, like, bars to drink, mm-hmm. but the one that actually sues people for a living, unfortunately.
Thank you, and understand that caution. I think Council Dugan can make some brief comments towards his question.
Mary Dugan, General Counsel. What you said is correct. Under the contract, the Worth Group had the responsibility to correct what had been done incorrectly.
Thank you. Yeah. Seeing no other questions and comments, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 7, sale of land located in the Las Vegas Medical District to the City of Las Vegas for pedestrian streetscape improvements, UNLV. Regent Hayes. You have a disclosure for the medical district?
Yes, sir, I do. As I've said many times, I own commercial land in the medical district, and so as to not create a conflict of interest or appearance of conflict of interest, I recuse myself on and abstain from any vote dealing with that. This is the item on the sale.
This is relating to the streetscape improvements?
Yes.
Okay.
So I will be abstaining on this one. There will be one in the future that I've discussed with Dean Gould that there is a difference in that I will be allowed to vote on. But on this one, I will be abstaining. Thank you.
Regent Carter.
As previously stated, I was a student in a gaming innovation course at UNLV where I developed a casino game. If that game is marketed and sold, I'll be required to pay UNLV in the form of shared royalties pursuant to a standard contract that all students in the course are required to sign. As this item does not relate to my interests, I will be voting on this agenda item.
Thank you. President Miana.
Thank you. So with this agenda item, UNLV is requesting approval to finalize the City of Las Vegas's acquisition of two small parcels of land. One is 1,543 square feet and the other 1,665 square feet on Shadow Lane and West Charleston. The city requested this acquisition to accommodate streetscape improvements consistent with the Las Vegas Medical District plan. And so the enhancements consist generally of increasing the existing right-of-way, widening the sidewalk with trees, mill and overlay with new striping, bike lanes, new streetlights, pedestrian crossings, and bus turnouts. UNLV had appraisals conducted on the land and on the loss of the existing sign that's on the Charleston parcel. And based on these appraisals, the city and UNLV agreed on a purchase price of $35 per square foot of land, infrastructure loss within the acquisition areas of 11,102 for both sites combined, and the replacement value of the sign at $56,000 for a total of $179,500. UNLV requests that the chancellor be authorized to finalize, approve, and execute all documentation necessary to complete all legally reviewed and approved transactions. I want to state that these streetscape improvements are in UNLV's interest, as they really enhance the functionality and the aesthetics of the area and clearly the frontage of our properties.
Motion for approval. I have a motion from Regent Page, second from Regent Lieberman. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed,
aye.
No. Motion carries unanimously with the two noted abstentions.
No, he just disclosed.
Oh, disclosed. One abstention, one disclosure. Thank you. Item number 8, engineering building update and financing sale and reimbursement resolution. Regent Carter.
As previously stated, I was a student in the gaming innovation course at UNLV where I developed a casino game, and if that game is developed, I'll have to pay royalties to UNLV. As this agenda item does not affect my interests, I will be voting on this agenda item.
President Miana.
UNLV is requesting approval of a resolution authorizing the preparation of a preliminary official statement for a tax-exempt financing for the UNLV engineering building, as well as for reimbursement from that financing plan for any costs incurred prior to the closing. The financing plan is for $20 million and would result in an annual debt service of $1.15 million for a total of 30 years. A little background here. In the 2017 biennium, the state allocated $1.75 million in planning funds for the engineering building, which UNLV matched primarily through donor funds. So consequently, UNLV requested that the engineering building be on NSHE's capital improvement program budget request going into this 2019 legislative session. The request was for a 50-50 matching funds for a 52,000 square foot three-story building with an estimated approximate cost of $74 million. I'd like to take just a few minutes for Dave Frommer, our Associate Vice President of Planning, Construction, and Real Estate, to update you on that building.
Thank you, President Miata. For the record, David Frommer, Associate Vice President, Planning, Construction, Real Estate, UNLV. Good afternoon, Chair Page. I'm sorry, Chair Page. I'm one meeting behind. Chair Geddes, old habits die hard, and members of the board. Just wanted to run through very briefly a presentation just to bring you back up to speed on the planning for this building. And I'm not sure if this clicker, does this advance the slides, or do I have to just ask?
Does it not work?
Yeah, this works. Great. If I would have pushed the button, that would have helped. So just going into a little bit of background here, the engineering building, a 52,000-square-foot, three-story building. This came before the board for two prior legislative session preparation. In general, again, three stories. The first floor focused on classroom teaching, maker and fabrication spaces, student and collaboration space, so more of the public interactive kind of spaces. Second floor of the building focused more on dry and computational labs, core lab facilities, and associated principal investigator and research assistant space. Third floor is focused on wet labs, core lab facilities, and again, associated principal investigator and research assistant space. Some of the program points of focus is noted from the College of Engineering that Dean Venkat has shared with us. Our circuit design, biomedical engineering, unmanned aerial vehicles, cybersecurity, and other areas are potential areas of research. Just to orient you where the building sits on the campus, you'll see that it sits pretty much between the Thomas Beam Engineering Building, the Science and Engineering Building, Ham Concert Hall, and then right near our Cottage Grove parking garage. It was cited to integrate well with existing engineering facilities and be a part of the campus and work well with those programs. Some imagery of the building. The design of the building is intended to connect with the existing campus with a contemporary and engaging architecture and building appearance that promotes visibility of engineering programs and activities and a very welcoming kind of spirit tying into the campus. And then one example of an artist rendering of an interior space. Again, classroom spaces have been designed to be flexible, engaging, and technology enabled to support contemporary teaching methods. So that's a brief overview of the building. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a motion for approval.
So moved.
Motion from Regent Page, second from Regent Moran.
Yes, I'll make a second. That's fine. I'll take the second on that. I just was going to make one comment, if you don't mind.
Regent Moran and then Perkins. Regent Moran.
Sure. I just wanted to say I actually spoke with the governor and the legislature and paid particular attention to the 2019 session, and obviously, Mr. Chairman, the 2017 session that was kind of the predicate act to this engineering building and the future development of this building. And I will say, Len Jessup, President Jessup, was instrumental in moving that forward as a capital project in 2017. To watch us go into the second session for this item in 2019 under the guidance or with President Miana at the helm was inspiring. And I admire her and her team for going and taking this priority and moving it forward. It was a difficult session to secure monies for the specific project. There were a lot of other competing projects that needed the funding as well. It didn't look very good going into the session, even though from a conceptual standpoint, we needed it. But I just wanted to put that on the record. And, I only give credit where credit is due. But I wanted to give credit under this circumstance because I saw it. I didn't participate in it, but was definitely on the sidelines watching and hearing and got some great feedback. And this is going to be really quite some building when it's all said and done. And it's going to be very difficult to outdo what UNR has done with their engineering building, of course. But we're going to definitely try down here in the South, and I'm sure President Miana will continue that effort. So I just want to put that into the record, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Regent Perkins?
Regent Moran just stole my thunder. That's exactly what I was going to say about the intense lobbying effort on UNLV's behalf that got this building in at the last minute, you know, with basically a Hail Mary, because all through the session it was like, no, we don't have enough money for this, no, we don't have enough money for this building. But with the intense lobbying that was done by UNLV and the dean and all the other individuals involved, it became a success.
President Miana, did you have a comment?
Thank you very much. It was obviously a very important project for us. It's our fastest growing college. It's integral to the workforce development, not just of this community, but of the entire state. And we were very pleased and grateful to have the outcome that we had.
Seeing no other comments, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed,
aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 9, Medical Education Building Update and Financing, Sale, and Reimbursement Resolution, UNLV. Regent Carter.
Once again, I was a student in the gaming innovation class at UNLV where I designed a casino game. If that casino game does get marketed and developed, I'll have to pay a royalty to UNLV. As this item has no effect on my intellectual property rights, I will be voting on this agenda item.
You should put that on your phone for next time, like a recording. Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I stated before, I own commercial land in the medical district. However, in conversations with council, it's believed I can participate in discussions, deliberations, and voting on this matter, as the location has already been decided, and this is merely the financing mechanism for building the building. As opposed to where to site it, and that it would not, that how to finance it would not have significant impact on the value of the land I hold, and that I would be free to vote on that. If I see Dean Gould nodding, if Dean Gould could acknowledge on the record that we had that discussion, that was the determination.
I will acknowledge that you're doing this under advice of counsel.
Thank you, sir.
President Miana.
Although UNLV remains open to considering all options that would result in the construction of a medical education building, we are making a request today for approval of one known feasible pathway to making this happen. So UNLV is requesting approval of a resolution authorizing the preparation of a preliminary official statement for a tax-exempt financing for the medical education building, as well as for reimbursement from the financing plan for any costs incurred prior to the closing. The financing plan is for $128 million and would result in an annual debt service of $7.35 million for a total of 30 years. Now, in line with the most prudent financial planning possible, we have proposed a worst-case scenario in which no donor or state funds are assumed at the start of the project. Although the state funds remain in place, SB 553 has deadlines for the encumbrance of these funds that would be impossible to meet. So a project extension or other amendment would, in fact, be required. Although we're hopeful that that would occur, our calculations do not take it for granted. The conceptualized medical education building is a 140,000-square-foot, four-story building that would house all of the medical education needs and services of entering classes of up to 120 students. Administrative offices would not be housed in the building and would remain in current facilities. And I'm going to, again, ask David Frommer to give you just a three-minute kind of review of this building.
Thank you, President Miana, and good afternoon, Chairman Geddes and members of the board. David Frommer, for the record, just go into a few brief comments on the current plan for the medical education building. So here you see four conceptual layouts of the building, four stories of the four-story building. Again, 140,000 square foot plus or minus four-story building. Spaces focused on classroom and teaching space, comprehensive anatomy teaching labs, clinical simulation and skills, and learning resource center and study space, so very much an academic education-focused facility. looking at a planning schedule, and this schedule is still being developed and refined, but the planning schedule is estimating at this time that we would break ground, assuming everything goes as planned, prior to the deadline in our land agreement with Clark County for construction to start. However, this is being refined, working with the state of Nevada and the Public Works Division to make sure that it incorporates all of the state required components of the process and per SB 553. A site plan of the building, the initial build out, you'll see the medical education building is at the northwest corner of the site with parking and site improvements largely to the south. This site was selected to have a prominent corner site of the building, very visible, very integrated with the community and the surrounding. And you'll see the two renderings on the right, which are very conceptual and will be subject to further update and refinement. But the general spirit is that we're trying to design a building that's responsible, functional, prominent, attractive, connects with its community, and enhances the overall design of the Las Vegas Medical District and contributes to that. And then a brief statement about the full site build-out. This shows the longer-term planning we've done on the site, again, still conceptual and early, but the notion that the medical education building would allow further development on the site of other facilities is needed in the future, including going to a structured parking approach and using the area for current site parking for future building development. Thank you.
Thank you, David. If I could continue. As our medical school welcomes its third class, the space constraints, even for entering classes of 60 students, are already being felt. Growing the medical school in its current facilities would simply be impossible. A medical education building is essential to the growth and maturity of this medical school that we have all invested so much in and that this community and state need. Now, as previously mentioned, the annual debt service on the building, if the full $125 million were bonded, would be $7.35 million for a total of 30 years. UNLV would make fundraising for the debt service on the medical education building a priority, and I have asked Diana Bennett, Vice Chair of the UNLV Foundation Board of Trustees, to briefly speak to the viability of raising such funds.
Good afternoon. Okay. Chairman, Regents, Chancellor, and all the Presidents. My name is Diana Bennett, and I stand before you today as Vice Chairman of the UNLV Foundation, and probably more importantly, I will be Chairman during the very years that this medical school will be under construction. I wish to express our support for the proposed building of the medical school. I believe that the university and all of those associated with the medical school have truly narrowed down the focus and the parameters for this new medical school as it is currently being proposed. More importantly, I believe that we are able to fund the debt service on the medical school not only by looking back at the trailing 5 years of funding that the university and the foundation has been able to raise, but also realizing that when the medical school is under construction, that the money we will be able to raise based on seeing the school being built and naming rights for the medical school will be easily able to raise that additional money. I truly support and all the members of the foundation, many of whom were out of town and could not be here, but they also expressed their support for the president. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Diana. Of course, we have also identified backstop sources of revenue to cover the debt service were fundraising to fall short. An examination of our uncommitted investment income, administrative overhead, and to a much lesser extent, capital and general improvement fees indicate that we have sufficient coverage for the debt service, even in the worst-case scenario. So your approval of the resolution today will allow UNLV to prepare the preliminary official statement and reimburse expenses incurred prior to the closing. There is some urgency to this request as the deed restriction on the 9-acre parcel of land generously conveyed by the county has a construction start deadline of summer 2021. And as was the case with the engineering building, this is a two-step process whereby UNLV would return to the board at a future meeting to request approval for the financing resolution to issue the bonds, completed, of course, in consultation with NSHE's registered municipal advisors and NSHE's bond council.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval? Motion from Regent Lieberman.
Second.
From Regent Page.
Jeez.
I don't count. Go ahead and come in, Carol. Do we have any questions or comments? Regent Lieberman.
This is not the ideal plan that we had focused on previously, but there's at least two things to be very optimistic about. First of all, the spaces that are being created are strictly student-focused. The classroom space, the innovative lab space, they are the first priority, and they will serve our students in a very real way. Second of all, the fact that Ms. Bennett being here as the future incoming chair of the foundation stands for a very powerful statement about the collaboration between the university and our community donors in moving this project forward as soon as possible. So I'm grateful to many for that.
Regent DeBrava, then Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I also am fully supportive of this plan. And the nice thing is it still allows flexibility. If things were to change down the road, that, you know, different revenue monies, that would certainly be welcome. But I think this is a great thing to do to get the ball rolling. Let's get shovels in the dirt. And I also just want to take a moment to recognize Dean Atkinson is here today. And, Dean, thank you for all your help with the several iterations of this building.
Any other questions or comments? Regent Page, sorry.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I as well support this, and I also want to thank President Meander and Dean Atkinson. But a special note is that there's a note here about the cadaver lab and virtual anatomy teaching spaces, so it's nice to see that combination for this building. So good job.
We wanted to give students a choice.
Seeing no other questions and comments, we'll all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay. Any abstention? Nope. Motion passes unanimously. Okay. Item number 10, Memorandum of Agreement for UNLV and City of Las Vegas Parking and Ancillary Facility Collaboration at the Shadow Lane Campus, UNLV. This is an information-only item update. President Miana.
Yes, a description of this facility and the general plan for an agreement were presented at a previous meeting, and today we really just wanted to update you and let the board know that UNLV continues to work very closely with the City of Las Vegas on a memorandum of agreement that outlines the specific terms for future development of this parking and office mixed-use facility at the UNLV Shadow Lane campus. So implementation agreements related to this MOA will be presented for your approval at a future meeting of the board once that all appropriate reviews have been completed. But I want you to know that we are still working hard on it with the city in a very collaborative way.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Regent Moran?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The only thing, I saw that it was changed from an information or from an action agenda item to an information-oriented item. And when I took a look at the background and had an opportunity to speak with our general counsel, Mr. Reynolds, I noticed that the way that the legal department over at UNLV was transacting this item, they were characterizing it as a memorandum of agreement. And that kind of puts you into like a trajectory of you're making an agreement to enter into an agreement, which doesn't seem logical, in my opinion. So just
on the record, maybe that's something that can be addressed when this item does come back as an action agenda item. In terms of the transactional mechanism that they're utilizing, maybe it would be more like an MOU, and the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, would then come back with, okay, once there's agreed upon terms and conditions of the agreement between the parties, then they will be entering into a solid agreement that will be executed by all parties interested. Just a suggestion.
General Counsel, did you have?
Thank you, Regent Moran. We're undergoing that legal review currently and plan to look at those revisions and bring this back to the board for approval. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now move on to item number 11, update on the July 5th, 2019 incidents at UNR and authorization to enter into agreements relating to higher education and housing needs of UNR students. President Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Geddes and Board. To be as succinct as possible and be complete, I'm going to read my statement about what happened with this explosion and where we're going into the future. A major explosion occurred on Friday, July 5, which seriously damaged Argenta and Nye residence halls at the University of Nevada, Reno campus. We were very fortunate no one was seriously injured or killed. The incident has sharpened our awareness of what we must be prepared for and given us confidence that what we have invested in did prepare us to handle this crisis. So I'll go through a timeline and an explanation regarding the explosion itself, the steps and actions taken in the wake of the explosion, and our plan to accommodate students' housing and dining into the future. So first, some background on the preparations we made ahead of time. The University of Nevada, Reno has an issues management team, which has been in place for more than 4 years. The team is composed of principal responsible university decision makers, including the president, most vice presidents, the police chief, the manager of organizational resilience, the director of communications, and other specialists brought in for their subject matter expertise, depending on the nature of the crisis. The existence of this team prepared us for possible crises like this. Using the issues management team framework as our guide, we've held simulated drills each semester to practice in crisis scenarios such as active shooters on campus, chemical spills, and purposeful cyber attacks. We've consistently practiced scenarios that tested our campus's resiliency, our internal and external communications, and public safety and health reactions. We've learned the best practices for these types of situations by making it a university priority to send teams from our campus each year for national FEMA disaster response training. Although we hadn't specifically practiced a building explosion scenario, the same principles of organization for crisis management that we had practiced beforehand certainly informed how quickly and how effectively we mobilized the campus in response to this explosion. We had practiced and we were ready with the chain of command, roles, and actions clearly defined ahead of time. Reciprocal agreements with our first responder agency also helped a great deal. Within an hour of the explosion, our issues management team was already in place. A clear chain of command had been established through the use of our emergency phone tree. I was out of the country when the blast occurred. Vice President for Student Services, Shannon Ellis, was in Washington State, and Vice President for Administration and Finance, Vic Redding, was on vacation. And although some of the primary leaders of our campus were not in town on July 5, we had backup administrators trained to jump in to lead into the lead positions for the issues management team to implement emergency procedures swiftly and effectively. In particular, almost from the time of the explosion, Kevin Carman, University Police Services Chief Todd Renwick, Chief of Staff Patricia Richard, Manager of Organizational Resiliency,
Amanda Wenz and Executive Director of Marketing Communications, Carrie Garcia, were immediately on the site and had mobilized their teams for effective action. I have to give special shout-out to Shannon Ellis and her people in Student Services. From the very beginning, Romando Nash, Associate Vice President for Student Life Services, and Jerome Mays, Director of Residential Life, both did incredible jobs of mobilizing the staff of Student Services and Residential Life. And just as an aside, Romando had been on the job 3 weeks. I need to also acknowledge how quickly we were in contact with our elected leaders. Governor Steve Sisolak and his office were in contact within minutes of the blast. Mayor Hillary Sheevy and her team also were working with us from the outset. Senators Cortez Masto and Jackie Rosen pledged their support and were available as well. Chair Geddes and Chancellor Riley reached out early and often and helped us in the hours after the blast. As for the blast itself, police services and Reno Fire and Police were almost immediately on the scene. In fact, the Reno Fire Department had already been dispatched and were on the scene before the second and most powerful blast occurred. In addition to the complete evacuation of the building prior to the major explosion, emergency alerts were sent out via text to the entire campus that there had been an incident and to please stay away from the site. Our communication team began working almost immediately. 50 minutes after the blast, the first media briefing was held. In all, there were 5 media briefings over the next few days. A media tour inside the Argenta Hall was held on Thursday, July 11. The cascade of information that our campus, the media, and our community received also included 40 social media messages, 2 Facebook live videos, and an Argenta explosion frequently asked questions at unr.edu, which was updated every day. There were approximately 300 students living in Argenta Hall at the time. 100 were international students attending conferences on our campus, with an additional 203 who were summer session students staying in Argenta Hall. Efforts were made immediately to make contact individually with each of these students to obtain their whereabouts, their safety, and to provide them information about where they would be staying that evening and where they would be eating that evening. Our students did not miss a night's sleep or a meal as a result of this incident. Residence Life set up a command center to make these contacts, and we felt it was important that these students receive text messages, emergency alerts, and could find regularly updated information on our website, which they did. We felt it was equally important that personal contact was made with each of them, and by 10:40 p.m. on the night of the blast, we had accomplished this equally important goal of knowing our students, that each of our students were informed of the day and that a personal contact was made with each of them and we understood the level of their welfare. We've used this type of approach before. When we contacted students from Las Vegas to establish their well-being and whereabouts in the aftermath of the October 1 shootings in Las Vegas, when the Paradise Fire raged through a community in Northern California where several of our students were from, and when we contacted our Japanese and other international students after the major tsunami hit several years ago. Immediately after the explosion, housing staff and student employees worked quickly to move to open Peavine Hall and prepare beds for the residents displaced from Argenta. Nevada Dining served dinner in the Overlook Cafe that evening, not only for the students who were displaced, but also for the first responders. Our staff, students, and faculty pitched in and pulled together immediately to meet the needs of everyone affected. Our staff used signs and walked the floors of Peavine Hall to inform students of counseling services, available clothing resources, how to put in their requests for retrieval of vital items from their rooms, like medicine, glasses, and passports, and when more information meetings would be held in the coming hours and days. Specific actions included, we ran escort vans Friday night through Sunday night to take students to Walmart to buy clothes and incidentals. We had a room set up for donated T-shirts from across the campus, from ASUN to new student orientation program. All of the students had been reconnected with their belongings by Wednesday of this week. We had mental health counselors on site Friday night, all day Saturday, Saturday night, and all day Sunday and Sunday night. And they brought in therapy dogs that weekend and the full week after. The ASUN bookstore brought over stuffed animals for the counseling sessions and lots of posters for the students to decorate their temporary rooms in Peavine Hall. We handed out gift cards that weekend and during the week and transported students to stores so they could buy things. Because we planned ahead and practiced different scenarios, we also had established strong partnerships with public safety and emergency agencies in our community and throughout the region. We had 21 different emergency and public safety entities on site on that Friday, July 5, in the wake of the explosion. They came to our campus as first responders because they're really good at what they do. And because of the reciprocal agreements we've had in place for many years, they came to help. And because they're reciprocal agreements, we go to help when there is another event in somewhere else in the community. We meet regularly and we practice together so that the entire community is ready to respond when incidents of this nature occur. State Fire Marshal Bart Chambers praised our effort before, during, and after the Argenta explosion. He said during a press conference of our safety procedures that were in place, he quote, "I cannot praise enough the system that UNR has in place. The safety measures that are in place are some of the best in the country." I need to compliment the State Fire Marshal for not only paying us a compliment, but for the important work he and his team did as real public servants. Chief Chambers not only investigated the cause of the explosion, the investigation continues, he immediately called for and executed inspections of all of our residence halls and their boilers, and clearly realizing that it was important to the public, the students, and the parents to understand that the Argenta explosion was an isolated incident and not global in nature, he extended his team's inspections to UNLV's residence halls as well to put the minds of all Nevadans at ease. Chief Chambers has provided fire safety information that we have already begun distributing to our students during orientations. We will continue to distribute this timely and extremely helpful information to all of our incoming residents. Chief Chambers, along with all of the first responders who helped deal with the Argenta explosion, deserve our thanks for their thorough and personal and professional excellence. We've now entered a new phase for Argenta and NIHAL as well. On Tuesday, University Police Services, again, thanks very much to Todd Renwick, our police chief, for his incredible work. The police chief handed over control of the incident from police services back to the university and student services and facility services. Requests for qualifications are out now for the design and contracting services to repair Argenta and Nye Halls. It's estimated that Nye Hall will be back online in fall 2020. And Argenta, which had much more extensive damage, will likely be back online in fall of 2021. So now, I'm sure you're all wondering, there are a couple more questions that need to be answered, like one, where are we going to find 1,300 beds for the displaced students in Nye and Argenta Hall? And number two, where will these students go for their dining contracts? Currently, we are in active discussions with El Dorado Resorts. We propose to use the Circa Circa Sky Tower, which is a non-gaming, standalone, and recently remodeled tower. It's located to the west of the circus property, two blocks away from gaming. We've had a good working relationship with El Dorado Resorts as we've rented parking spaces from them for the last 13 years. This particular tower would be rebranded to the university. It will only occupy university students under our proposal, our students and employees, and the public will have no access to this tower. We feel it is vitally important that the 1,300 students who will not be living in Argenta and Nye Halls this fall still have a seamlessly integrated university housing experience, one that will include all of the support infrastructure we know is vital for first-year student success and retention. Students living in the interim hall will receive an academic and community environment that promotes student success, programs, activities, and amenities that aid in the student experience and transition to being part of a university, and access to the university's first-class dining experience. Student staff, including live-in academic mentors offering tutoring hours and resident assistants on each floor, full-time live-in staff that are master's-level faculty and graduate student assistant resident directors. In addition, the university will expand our shuttle service, the five blocks from the campus to the tower, and the tower will have around-the-clock security and will utilize a key card system for entry into the building. There are surveillance cameras in all of the public areas, and we have the ability to secure the walkway to the tower and the elevators from the parking garage. A person will have to be a resident with a room key to gain access to the room and lounge areas. We will have two desk attendants on every shift, 24/7, and security walking the premises. University Police Services will establish a substation in Wolfpack Tower that will be patrolled 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by University Police Services. We have looked at other properties throughout the Reno's Parks area. None can replicate what this West Tower can provide. 1,300 beds to house all of the displaced students, complete university control of the entire building, and close proximity to campus. In terms of dining, since our main dining facility was in Argenta Hall, we must move quickly to replace that. We've transitioned the Overlook Cafe, which is in the old Jot Travis building, into an all-you-care-to-eat dining facility for our summer session meal plan holders. The Overlook will continue to be used in this fashion for the fall of 2019. In addition, however, we need more capacity. We will bring in a prefabricated module kitchen dining area, which will be located by Great Basin Residence Hall in early August. By November, the interim dining facility will then move to a sprung structure facility located near Thompson Hall and Jot Travis Building. A sprung structure is a semi-permanent structure that has been used successfully by other institutions of higher education when a permanent dining facility has not been available. In particular, the sprung structure we will be using was used at Emory University in Georgia in 2017. It's a 17,000 square foot sprung structure resembling a teardrop shaped field house, and it will be heated and cooled for the 1 or 2 year term that the students will be dining there. So I'll close by finally saying, I need to praise the people on the campus for how they reacted, how they've continued to work in the wake of the July 5 explosion. They're still working very long hours. The explosion that occurred on July 5 was an event without precedent on our campus, yet the people of the university have not wavered. The University Police Services and Student Services people have been working 20-hour days. People throughout the campus have volunteered to help. They take up extra duties so that those closest to our students can continue to make sure that they're okay. We're very fortunate that no one was seriously injured or killed. We still want those affected to know that we're still there for them. We have lots of planning and long days ahead of us, but our resolve is that all of our students, all of our faculty, staff, and the community will be taken care of, and we will continue to plan ahead in case there's another devastating crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, President Johnson. And I just want to say on behalf of the board and the chancellor, when we were up there and visiting and communicating, our message to the president and all of his staff on campus was make sure the students are safe, secure, and everybody is doing well, and we'll figure out the rest of it later. But just make sure everybody is doing well. And I think the campus and really Shannon Ellis and Todd Renwick and Provost Carmen were available and out there and talking to everybody. And it was truly amazing when the Chancellor and I came back from a visit on Monday that Provost Carmen was talking to the Vietnamese students and the Korean students and assuring them that they'd be getting their passports and their medication and their properties because the first group were heading out on Saturday. And I just want to thank them all for students first, students first, students first, and then we'll figure it out. So with that, we're at the point of figuring out next steps. And are there any questions or comments from the regents to President Johnson? Regent Lieberman?
Just to comment, I think the work that was done with the crisis plan before this was amazing and obviously helps you. If we could get that crisis plan to the other campuses so that they could do something similar, if they aren't already doing that, I think it would be wonderful. And I also want to thank the students, faculty, staff, and community on your campus, and also thank El Dorado for the partnership to make the transition in housing seamless for everybody, or as close to seamless as humanly possible.
Regent Dubrava, then Page, then McAdoo. Regent Dubrava.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I just wanted President Johnson and the University of Nevada, Reno, to know that everyone in the state was so concerned of when they heard this and what had happened, and it is, you know, thank goodness no one lost life. There were some injuries and property damage, but that can usually be fixed, and we want to support you. I wanted you also to know that many Reno alum that live in Southern Nevada actually reached out to me to say how can they help, and they were ready to donate clothing and goods, and I forwarded them to Provost Carmen, and everyone was just so concerned, and what we can learn from this, I think everything did, it was admirable how everyone performed. We'll look back and see if we can improve on, you know, we want to always be safe for the students and the faculty, everyone that goes to the university. So,
excuse me, just a quick response to that. We are planning to all get together for an aftermath review of what could be improved.
Regent Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I just want to say job well done, and especially to Provost Carmen, because we have the officer in charge, and a lot of times people think, oh, it's just a formality, but in this case, you know, he had to get in action right away. So the officer in charge is really, really important. So appreciate all you did.
Regent McAdoo?
I think Regent Page read my notes. As you know, I always have them. but it's really just three words. Job well done by your team and staff. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think it's more like great minds think alike.
I can't read. I can't see.
And walking attests to that. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I too want to join my colleagues in expressing the gratitude, really, to our Lord for no deaths and no serious injuries. First, I've heard some of the stories how the timing could have been a second here or a second there. If the technician had been standing in a different place, it could have been different. But that emergency response team with the planning for 4 years really proves that we've got to have these on all the campuses. If we don't, this will go down as a textbook case in what goes right. So many times we look back and things went wrong because it was poor planning or whatever, but this is really, I just can't compliment everyone that was involved enough to for what's happened. And I too want to say to the El Dorado people that it's so great to have community partners that can help us, and I can't think of a better partner than the El Dorado family. So well done for everyone at the campus, and we'll continue to support you in any way you need.
Chancellor Riley.
And I'd like to echo Chair Geddes and others too, is that, you know, from within 30 minutes of after it happened in conversation with Provost Carmen, I continually had the utmost confidence in working with your team. As Chair Geddes said, the focus was always on students and staff and what needed to be done to protect them. But I was just, you know, when we toured Monday, Chair Geddes and I, just the confidence from your public safety and others, it was very reassuring. Any question we came up there, they had thoughts, plans, it was active, and it was a job well done. But I tell you, I had the utmost confidence from my first conversation, and it continued the days after, so thanks.
Thank you, and I will, I think President Johnson touched on, but to Regent Brava's point of the one state, you know, they reached out to the Clark County Emergency Response Search and Rescue Team and asked for help. And by Saturday, the first people arrived by airplane, and Saturday night, the trucks had rolled up with all their equipment to go in and do an urban search and rescue sweep of the building. And the Clark County Task Force 1 was just there the next day and in the building. And on our tour, they're amazingly reassuring, just showing us how bad it could have been, and how the building was actually built right, and it did what it was supposed to do, and the services in there were right, and it's the importance of making sure we follow up on what we're doing with building. With that, we do need some action, and we're looking for a motion to emergency authorize UNR President Johnson, subject to Chair and Chancellor review and approval, to enter into the necessary agreements to protect the health, safety, and welfare, and secure housing, dining, security, and other necessary resources for UNR students for 2019-20, 2021 academic years arising out of the July 5 incidents. Do I have such a motion from Regent
Mr. Chairman,
Del
before
Carlo?
We start?
Yeah, from Regent Del Carlo, second from Regent McAdoo, and Regent Trachuk, you have a disclosure?
Yes, my firm, McDonald Carano, represents the Carano family and the El Dorados, and so I will abstain from all discussion and voting on this item.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions or comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously with Regent Trachuk abstaining. Good luck, President Johnson. President Johnson.
Well, thank you very much. And just want to make it clear that we do not have an approved deal or a contract yet. So I really appreciate the motion, which will facilitate us moving as quickly as possible to a final resolution. Thank you.
Yeah, we may not want to thank the El Dorado too soon until we get to some further negotiations. I'm just kidding. Not funny.
New business. Is there any new business for the board? Regent Perkins.
I was recently asked to speak at One Stop Connection, which is a job workforce. I would like to have them come here and tell us what they're doing, because they're right across the street from the West Charleston campus of CSN, and they also are thinking about putting a they're located in different pockets in Southern Nevada, and they have $16 million that they're going to spend on workforce redevelopment for students and displaced workers and underemployed workers.
Thank you. Any new business? Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Before the end of the year, I would like to see on our agenda a review of the funding formula and how it affects our community colleges. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other new business, we'll go to public comment. Is there public comment in Elko?
No public comment from Elko.
Is there public comment in Reno? Please come forward, sir.
No, there's no
public.
Oh, wait. Yes, there is.
Yes, there is.
Not loud. There's one right now.
Okay.
I'm going to come here, sir. Timer's down there.
Thank you.
Please state your name and proceed.
Joseph Geddes and Joseph Ariscotta, graduate of the University of Nevada, Reno, and proud season ticket holder, but actually a former season ticket holder at Mackey Stadium. I want to express my appreciation to the Board of Regents for the authorization to commence legal proceedings against the Worth Group up at the University of Nevada, Reno's campus, specifically Mackey Stadium. To be quite frank, Chairman, the Worth Group failed the university. But they disappointed every person with a disability who had and has tickets up at that stadium. After a $16 million renovation, which is now up to $16 million, and who knows how much more will go on, the Worth Group has to be held accountable for their oversight with the lack of review, and it seems to be competency for accessibility up on Mackey Stadium. At the conclusion of the next renovations for people with disabilities on campus, as in Mackey Stadium, I don't just challenge the architect and the construction company to walk the campus, to walk the stadium, but I also challenge all the regents to go into the university, get onto a walker, use a scooter, perhaps use a wheelchair. I have plenty of for you all to use, plenty of them for you. After 33 years, I have a lot of wheelchairs. But go to Mackey Stadium at the conclusion of the new upgrade and see with your own eyes if it is fully wheelchair accessible. Super simple. You've allocated now $8 million for two buildings down in Las Vegas. You're up to $16 million for Mackey Stadium. The least you could do is show the respect to people with disabilities to make sure to confirm that it is fully wheelchair accessible for a positive game day experience. Because as of right now, it is not. And the disappointment that you have placed upon people with disabilities, not just in Reno, but for all Wolfpack fans who attend these games at Mackey Stadium, as of right now, somebody needs to be held accountable, and the Worth Group right now is an easy target. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you for speaking, and thank you for waiting to speak. Good seeing you, Joey. Is there any other public comment in Reno? Seeing none, is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? Yes, sir.
For the record, Arnold Bell of the College of Southern Nevada. I just want to take a moment here to acknowledge the late Honorable Assemblyman Tyrone Thompson's mother. Even though she's no longer here in the presence, she's here living-wise, but I just want you to know that she's not in attendance, but she was here. Just want to make it for the record, it was Virtus Thompson. But also want to just make sure I thank each one of you guys for taking this into consideration and voting on this timely endeavor, where this young man, Cinnamon Thompson, I should say, made a delible mark on our community. Thank you.
Is there any other public comment? Seeing none, we stand adjourned.